From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're taking a listen back to some of the best conversations we've had this year. Starting off, we head to the northwest corner of the state, where the California condor, one of the largest and rarest flying birds on the planet, once thrived on the West Coast. With 9-foot wingspans allowing them to soar up to 15,000 feet in the air, they could be seen from British Columbia to as far south as Baja California. But beginning in the 19th century, their numbers steadily declined and were nearly driven to extinction, before scientists captured the few remaining condors and saved the species through a captive breeding program. Today, there are about 330 condors in the wild and another 200 in captivity. Back in April, I spoke with Tiana Williams-Clausen, director of the Yurok Tribe's Wildlife Department, about not only an ecological milestone, but also how condors are a spiritual centerpiece for the Yurok people. I spoke with Tiana as they were preparing to release 4 condors over their ancestral lands for the first time in over 100 years. When did you first become fascinated with condors?
So my story is a little bit haphazard, I guess you might say. But I'm a Yurok tribal member. I grew up on the Yurok reservation and surrounding lands. And even as a young child, I knew that I wanted to give my life to serving the Yurok community. And there was a lot of ways that I could do that. For a long time, I thought I was going to be a doctor, actually went to school, got my degree at Harvard in biochemical sciences to be a doctor. But I got to the end of my senior year and I'm like, oh no, I don't want to be a doctor. But there was an opportunity that the tribe offers. They invest in their tribal youth by providing internships. And so after I graduated, I was offered an internship with our self-governance department, which is something like the State Department for Tribes. We work on co-management across the whole of Yurok ancestral territory to meet Yurok tribal needs. Now, that said, the self-governance department also coordinated what we called the Tribal Park Task Force, which was a panel of our elders specifically designated to prioritize natural and cultural resource restoration needs, because there was a lot of, unfortunately, destruction to our ancestral lands post-American contact, post-California Gold Rush. But they chose California condor Priganish as the single most important land-based species to bring back to Yurok ancestral territory. The last bird was seen around the turn of the 20th century, into the 20th century, because of our deep cultural ties to the birds, as well as the ecological function that was no longer being filled by their absence. And so I went from a position with the self-governance department to actually the first employee of our newly crafted wildlife departments, which had California condor as its flagship species. And so that was in 2008 when the wildlife department got started, and we've been working towards California condor recovery ever since then.
Yeah. I mean, and California condors are just one example of a species that was driven nearly to extinction because of humans. But if you can explain to us, like, specifically when it comes to California condors and Northern California, and they haven't been seen in the skies for over 100 years, what led to the disappearance from that region?
Unfortunately, as is often the story, it was largely human-caused problems for them. They had been relatively abundant in our region. As you'd mentioned, they went all the way up to British Columbia at one time. But with the huge influx of more people, there's just a lot more human impact. So, for example, there was direct take of condors, which is very hard on the species. They are a long-lived, they can live as much as 60 to 70 years, but slow-producing species. So if you have high mortality but low reproduction, that's, you know, what causes extinction. So there's direct harvest or killing of them for science or out of fear of them. There's people laying out poisoned carcasses for other species that they had concerns over, like wolves or bears, and the condors would eat them and die. As you referenced, condor story is not a unique one. There was a lot of over-harvest of the foods that they relied on. So the large game, like elk and deer and California sea lion and whales, so they didn't have the food resources to continue to persist. And there's the introduction of new and toxic chemicals. Two of them that remain an issue today are lead contamination, which has been implicated through the use of lead ammunition. It's a soft material and fragments heavily upon impact, which probably isn't too much of a problem for most adult humans, but for condors and other scavengers like eagles, you know, a piece as small as the head of a pin can kill one of these animals. And so it will break into hundreds of pieces, get into a gut pile, a hunter will leave the gut pile behind, which is normally good food for a scavenger, but not when contaminated with lead. And that's actually caused something like 50% of known mortality for condors in the wild, even today, in most recent years. So that was introduced. The other chemical is DDT, which we know causes eggshell thinnings and remains a problem for condors in some places where they're using a lot of coastal resources. So these things can be addressed. For example, that we stopped using DDT in our environment, and it's only going to be a downward trend from there. And there's been a lot of support from the hunting community to transition to non-lead ammunition, which is non-toxic for these birds. But they definitely had their impact and unfortunately continue to have their impact in certain areas.
Yeah, especially since the Yurex relationship with these birds goes back to the beginning of time. Can you tell us more about the history of this relationship and the condor's cultural and spiritual significance to Yurok people?
Definitely. So I think to start, as you say, you got to start with the beginning of time. It's always hard for me to be brief because you have to start with the beginning of time for most stories. But even before humans were really what we consider to be the people of the world, the spirits or the animals were the people of the world. And it was from them that we learned how to manage the world and keep it in balance. And so one of the ways that we do this is through our world renewal ceremonies. We actually consider ourselves to be world renewal people. That's our foundational reason for existing, to keep the world in balance and healthy. But back in the beginning of time, it was species like the condor who helped develop these ceremonies that we continue to engage in today, providing us prayers, providing us parts of our regalia. Condor, particularly, we believe, ecologically speaking, he actually flies higher than any other species in the entire world, or in the entire North America, excuse me. And so we believe that he carries our prayers over the world when we're asking for the world to be in balance. So he is very foundational to our reason for being. So not having him here as a part of our ecological community has been very difficult because it's hard to maintain a relationship with someone who's been gone for well over 100 years. And that's largely what drove us to start this initiative.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And this initiative, as you mentioned, began over a decade ago. You've personally been working on this since you were interning as an undergrad. And the expected release of these California condors has made state and even national headlines. It must be such a special moment. What does this moment mean for you?
It is incredible. I mean, there's just been so much. I mean, there's obviously my heart is too full to even possibly describe. The first time, because we actually have the birds up in Humboldt County, as you mentioned. So the first day that they were there, there was lots of gritting. There was lots of tears. I didn't get very excited. I'm going like this, like wiggling my hands and stuff. But there's just so much love for them in the community as well, which has just completely buoyed us up and kept us going for the last 14 years. And of course, condors themselves are so iconic when it comes to terms of endangered species conservation and saving them, really. So this has just been a huge deal for so many people. And one of the things that I love about condors, not only themselves, but is just how much love people have for them and how they bring people from so many diverse walks of life together in support of such incredible conservation movements.
Yeah, they're majestic. And I mean, when our producer Nick brought up this story and reached out to you, I mean, we all got super excited about it. So it definitely has ripple effects beyond Northern California and Humboldt County. In addition to the sacred and spiritual role that condors play, you know, they're also a piece of the ecosystem. Can you tell us more about the role that California condors have in the ecosystem and why it's so crucial and important?
So California condor are an obligate scavenger, as we say. They only eat dead carcasses on the landscape versus something like an eagle, which can both, you know, kill food itself and scavenge for food. Now, that said, we do have our local scavengers. We do currently have our turkey vultures and our common ravens, but they're, compared to condors, relatively small. The ecological niche that condor fills is being able to really start the decomposition process for the very large animals that they like to feed on. So again, that's the elk and the deer, California sea lions and whales that otherwise have a hard time to start getting broken down in our system. So, you know, me, I live on the coast. I do a lot of beach walking. It's very common that you'll walk along the beach and you'll see these large, really honestly disgusting bloated California sea lion carcasses, not to be too indelicate there. But condors go in and they break through that tough skin, that thick blubber that smaller animals can't, not only feeding themselves, but also decomposing the animal and making the food more bioavailable to other scavengers to eat.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're talking with Tiana Williams-Clausen, the director of the Yurok Tribe's Wildlife Department, sharing efforts to return the California condor to tribal lands after a 100-year absence. So let's get to the big question. Can you tell us when you think these condors will be released?
I can tell you very soon. It's a little bit of a biological complexity. These are young birds. They're 2 and 3 years old. We have 4 birds who will be releasing, 1 female and 3 males. They are full size. They're full grown, but they're still considered juveniles. And they came from the captive rearing facility. So they've actually never been out in the wild. So we're looking for a particular set of environmental factors to release them into. So one is the appropriate sort of weather. So some decent wind, but not a ton of wind because it's going to be the first time they're flying out on their own. Some good sun. We'll also be looking for a time when our other local scavengers are nearby the release facility where they're currently being held so that we can release them out into a flock of turkey vultures or ravens. They're very social birds with each other, but also with the rest of the Avian Scavenger Guild. So we're looking for a time that kind of meets a multiplicity of environmental needs, but also making sure that the birds seem ready to go out themselves, that they're happy and healthy and ready to jump out. So hopefully within the next 2 to 3 weeks, though I don't have a specific day that it's going to happen yet.
Well, that's like 14 years in the making. So 2 weeks is like a snap of the fingers, right? Or a blink relatively. am I correct? Do these 4 birds, do they currently share a pen with a mentor bird?
They do. We have a mentor bird, 746. He actually came from the Boise World Center of Birds of Prey, who have been, I mean, they're managed by the Peregrine Fund, who have been an awesome partner. All of the California condor recovery managers and treatment facilities and breeding facilities have been amazing partners. But so we bring in a mentor bird who is an adult bird because he can help kind of finish off the condors, I guess you might say, and teach them really those last touches of appropriate condor social behavior, which is really beneficial to them when they're out in the wild because they are very communal, they are very social, and they rely on each other to do well. So he's kind of finishing them off, teaching them the last things that they need to know. He won't be released, unfortunately. He's staying with us probably for the first and probably the second cohort of birds that we'll receive as well, after which he'll return to the Boise World Center of Birds of Prey to help contribute to the breeding population. But for now, he's just a great asset, and we're so grateful to have him.
You know, once the birds are released, obviously your work isn't complete, and there are still challenges that these 4 condors will face. What is the next phase of your research, and what do you hope to learn?
Well, we just hope to learn what the birds teach us, honestly. It's been a very long time since they've been on the landscape, and while we do have traditional knowledge about how they use that landscape, this is a particularly unique situation in that it's the first new release area in 19 years, I think, almost 20 years. And all of our birds are going to have just the top technology for tracking them in the field. So this will be, the first release where we'll really be able to extensively monitor how a new reintroduction like this kind of plays out, like almost on an hourly sort of basis, because our satellite tags give us an hourly ping for everything that the birds do. So I'll be watching to see how they navigate a new state, a new place, not having another condor flock to integrate into, which thankfully through their hard work at other release sites, condors who are released do have an old flock to integrate into. So they're basically the pioneers here of Yurok ancestral territory. And I'm just going to be really interested to see how they adapt and expand into our landscape.
Yeah, given that this is so groundbreaking and going back to the beginning of time, how have your elders and ancestors helped shape this journey?
This has been entirely their doing. I mean, obviously the Yurok tribe, all tribes went through a very hard time and us no less. We were forced off of our lands. Our children were taken to the boarding schools where it was illegal to speak your language or practice your culture or wear your traditional clothing or anything. Our ceremonies were illegal until the 1970s. And so it's really incredible that we're still here to tell our story. But I'm just always amazed by the, I don't know, just the powerful hearts that maintained these cultural connections despite the absence of Condor, despite all the pressures on us as a human population. And so I really feel incredibly blessed by our elders who kept that knowledge, who kept that relationship, who maintained it until the world evolved to a place where people like me could pick it up and make changes like this. So this never would have happened without them. We've definitely had our elders out to meet the birds and just, I can't put into words how amazing that felt, how much gratitude they had for meeting the birds. I always put the honor to them, but it's the Yurok way to be grateful. And so I just really appreciate their gratitude for the work that we're doing. And I just feel like we're in a really amazing place and there's just only awesome things to come from here.
Yeah. You and these condors are healing generational harm, really.
We are. I think restoration of Preganish, which is the Yurok word, really means restoration of the Yurok people and our entire system.
Tiana Williams-Clausen is the director of the Yurok Tribe's Wildlife Department, sharing her efforts to return the California condor to her tribal lands after a 100-year absence. Since our conversation first aired in April, at least a half dozen condors have been released over Yurok land. Up next, we learn about the history of lowrider culture, now experiencing a revival of participation, leadership, and representation. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.